will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
Welcome to Leverage Addicts, the podcast for investors looking to maximize returns through leverage. Join host, seasoned mortgage professional and real estate enthusiast, Blandon Lerm, as we explore property investing strategies and learn how to navigate the market to build new wealth.
Back, Leverage Addicts. I'm your host, Blandon, and today we have the pleasure of inviting my good friend here, Trevor Smite, a father, a branch manager, an auctioneer, and an investor himself. And most importantly, he's actually one of the OG clients since we started this business. So welcome, Travis.
Thank you, mate. Good to be here.
Awesome, awesome. And there is a lot that we can unpack today because you've gone through so much. Because I remember when I first knew you, you were sort of 18 months into doing the real estate role and you were doing really well. And I remember we were doing either refinance or buying a house. I can't remember now, actually, the exact details. But all I know was that you were already a top performer at the time and pretty much in the 1% of hardcore agents. Well, actually, at the time you started at Barfoot and then later on you moved on to Harcourts. In between, you've done auctioneering, you're managing a branch now, and you even did, you know, on the side, you've got two kids far out that you started from, I think, zero. You know, at the time, it was probably...
That's right. Yeah, when we met, I don't think we had any, actually. When you and Andrew came in and spoke to us that time in the office, yeah, I think I was, you know, kidless.
Yeah.
Simpler times.
Yeah, yeah. And now the eldest one is eight almost.
Nearly. Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. And yeah, I guess in between, you've just gone through so much. So I thought it's been a decade for both of us. We haven't caught up since COVID, really. Besides maybe renewing your mortgage, it'd be good to trade lessons. You know, obviously you've learned some new things. I've learned some new things and we see a different side of the market. So what I want to know is what you've learned for properties and life.
Well, how long have we got?
All day, unless you've got an appointment. So
yeah.
Well, I've got a question to start with then, you know, because you did get to, you would have transitioned from something else to real estate. And I remember at the time I was like, wow, like when I first met you, you're already like a top performer. So you actually got there really quickly, right? How?
Great question. No real secret. Hard work and consistency would be the big things.
What does hard work look like? Where did this come from?
I'd been doing my previous job in advertising and marketing for about 7-8 years, and it wasn't something I was super passionate about. I wasn't that flash at it. I was okay, but it was just something I couldn't see myself doing for the rest of my life. So something that appealed to me was sales and real estate and the fact that it was 100% commission-based. So a really good saying I learned was real estate is the highest paying hard work or the easiest paying low work that you'll ever do. So it's... You really do get out what you put in. Yeah, I worked really long hours. I had made a commitment to myself that I wouldn't be going back to my previous job. So it really was do or die. So that really motivated me to get it going. We had a mortgage at the time. We wanted to have kids. So there's a lot of motivators there for me to make it work.
Right. Who are you trying to prove?
What's that?
Who are you trying to prove wrong? Or like,
oh.
Because you went from this place where you're like, okay, pretty chill job. And then you're like, okay, now you're like, I'm going to work my ass off.
Yeah. I think like many investors or anyone who wants to get ahead, I read the Rich Dad Poor Dad book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. And my parents, they had a copy and I read it. And then after reading that, I thought, I want to get into investing. And I actually asked them if I could use equity in their home. They said no. I was like, okay, how am I going to make this work? So
yeah.
That's basically how it happened. It was getting stuck in that way. Probably a lot of it was just proving to myself as well that I could actually do it and run a very small business.
Yeah. It's interesting because if you try to think back 10 years, you would have been younger lad.
That's right. Just turned 40. So yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. So consistency, talk to me about that. Like, what does consistency look like in something that you were doing?
So in that respect, for real estate, it was prospecting. No one knows you when you first start. So you really need to get traction there. I built my business largely around door knocking. Some people are better on the phones. I came from a marketing background. So
yeah.
I chose a really specific area to focus on. And my goal was to be the agent in that area when I wanted it to be when someone woke up and they wanted to sell their home one day, just randomly. I didn't want them to say, oh, we'll get someone from Ray White and someone from Harcourts and someone from Barfoot and Thompson. I wanted them to think of me specifically saying, oh, look, we're going to sell, I want to get Trevisan. So that was sort of the position. That's the way I wanted to position myself.
Yeah,
and, interesting. And I went from there. So yeah, it was like hard work. Like my standard. So at the moment, it was just me. At the time, I think I got married about a year into real estate. But at the time, me and my wife, or soon to be wife, we were renting a 2-bedroom unit. She was on a good wicket. It was enough to support both of us. So I didn't make any money in real estate for about 6-7 months.
Yeah. What did she think of that? Because you were like, you just got married and you're like, I'm going to quit my job.
Yeah. Oh, she knew I wasn't super passionate about my previous role. And so she was supportive of it. And she knew.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we'd sort of done a bit of homework around real estate and knew that, hey, look, for a bit of short-term pain, there'll be long-term gain. So yeah, no, I used to get up really early in the mornings at sort of 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd go to a short, not too long. She was committed to making it work. My wife, she was really supportive of me. She was on a good wicket. We sort of knew that the money wouldn't be flowing at the start. I had a part-time job. I'd get up at about 4 in the morning and go and put like bread on supermarket shelves and take it off, be finished at about 7. I'd then go put like, before AirPods, but I'd put my ears in and listen to audiobooks, and I'd go do like a mail drop in the area I work, go to the office, make a few calls, and then in the evenings I used to door knock the area I was focusing on. And yeah, just through that consistency, I managed to build out sort of personal market share in a very specific area of about 33% was about the height of it when I was selling. So yeah, look, it does take a while. I had some good success earlier on, but to build to that sort of 1/3 market share, that took a good sort of four years to get there.
I'm just trying to think back, because door knocking work for you? I mean, like, you know, we're sitting in front of a camera, I can see why. But for me, I actually did door knocking as well, but it didn't work for me.
Oh, it's hard. It's you've got to choose something that works. Yeah. It didn't work for me either. I remember the very first night I went out, I think I knocked on 50 doors. I didn't really know what I was meant to say. I just thought it would be weird. It was tough to get out of my comfort zone as well and do it. But I just thought, oh, there's got to be something better way to do this. And then I jumped on YouTube. I looked up different agents and scripts and sort of taught myself. And then I just sort of trialed with it until I found bits and pieces that worked for me. And then off I went.
What worked for me was the phone. So
yeah, yep.
Because they can't see my face, and then I get the appointment, and then it doesn't matter. We're sitting in an appointment.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I think that's an important learning too, is find what works for you and stick to it. Yeah, for something like real estate, if door knocking doesn't work for you, then there's other avenues as well. But anything, I would say, for anyone starting off in real estate, I would say it's a connection. So it's, you know, even though you're not face-to-face on the phone, it's a voice on the phone, it's a human, whereas I think you're probably looking at three options. You got door knocking on the phones, or relying on your existing network. Constant trap I see a lot of newer agents getting into is going really hard on the self-marketing. But, you know, people like to do business with people they know and they trust. So building those relationships as early as possible is the top tip.
You know how you said hard work and consistency? Now, you just talked about how in the morning you were listening to some audiobook. Because I find that a lot of people might focus on just working hard, but they might not do the hard work. Like for you to be able to go, okay, you transition from this corporate job to commission sales, you have to take the time. I know, like, for someone to get to the top, they have to take the time to reflect. Who was that guy that was talking to you in the audiobook? And what was he telling you?
There's so many books. I can't remember what I've listened to. There was a guy called Matt Steinwaite, who's a top real estate salesperson. Aussie. Yep, that's right. Yeah, phenomenal. And he built his business around, I basically just copied his method.
Really?
And that was what I was listening to a lot of the time.
Hey, it's Matt Steinwaite here. Have you had any thoughts on selling your property?
Yeah, exactly right. You know, you could be getting into real estate yourself.
Oh, mate, you know, like, I have definitely imagined myself, but, you know, I like numbers. I like just to push numbers on paper than the actual property.
It's not for everyone. It is like the attrition rate in the first year is huge. I think there's like an 80% dropout rate. So I knew that going into it. So I knew it wouldn't be easy. I mean, when you look at it at the start, it's not super appealing. There's lots of rejection and you're not getting paid anything. You know, it's 100% commission based. So you've got to go through a lot. But yeah, if you put in the hard work, it is rewarding. Like the first year I went backwards in pay from the job I left. But then I think in my second year, or may have been the start of my third year, there was 1 month where I basically bought in what I'd left, the salary. So I was like, okay, this is starting to make sense now, and then pay dividends.
Yeah, awesome. Auctioneering. What drew you to doing that as an addition to what you were already doing? Because you were doing well, right? Yep. But why did you decide to go, okay, that's the thing that you were going to expand into?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I fell into it, which is what a lot of auctioneers will say. Well, there was just changed companies, so Harcourt's Cooper & Co. now, and at the time, and still now, really good stable of auctioneers, and there was auctioneer training available. I thought this would be a great way to complement my sales business. I did that. I did fairly well in a few of the novice competitions. And then there was an opportunity about a year, year and a half later. And then basically put my hand up for it. And then off I went. Yeah.
Show us.
Show you?
Yeah, sure. Show us how you start off the auction. Like, there's so much energy. Just all I can remember is like a ton of energy. So how do you start? How do you start?
Ask for an opening bid.
376 Ellerslie Pamu Highway. That's the one that I'm going to be selling this year.
So. You're selling that? All right. Well, welcome you in there, sir. Off you go now. Opening bid, opening offer. What do you say? What do you do? Do you start off something nice and easy? Do you go $1 million now on the rise?
900.
Bit optimistic. Look, but I work with you now at 900,000. I'll be looking for $1 million now. Does someone say one? Once, twice, third chance in. Does anyone else go? You don't, I do, then a vendor bid. At $1 million now, do you come back in at 1-1, sir?
105.
105, ideally moving in 100s at this stage, sir. Could you see me in at 1.1?
All right.
Good on you now, 1,100,000. And
there we go. That's awesome. We got a snippet. If you guys need an auctioneer, you guys know who to call.
There you go.
You know, we talked about hard work, consistency. You know, you got two kids now.
Yep.
What are some personal mantra for yourself? You know, how do you, you know, try to strike a balance? Because obviously it's hard work in real estate. It's not just ups, right? We've got the downs and we've just experienced that like last 24 months, interest rates like triple, right? What are the foundational mantras for you?
I'd say the most, it's very basic. I've actually got a piece of artwork in my office at home. It just says work hard and be nice to people. And I think it's as simple as that. Yeah, really is. You know, people like to do business with people they trust. And, you know, if you're abrasive towards them, they're probably not going to want to do business with you. And, of course, working hard never really hurt anyone.
How do you keep the frustrations away, though? Like, what can you do, you know, when you're just like, oh, my gosh, this is stressful. Like, this customer's just making it, making life hard.
The mindset I had around that was everything's just a moment in time. So when I was door knocking, for example, if I faced rejection, if I got a door slammed on my face, the sort of thing I told myself was it's not a no, it's just a not right now. You know, that person might have had a terrible day at work. They might have just had an argument with their partner and then someone's knocking on the door. They just assume you're going to be asking them if they want to sell their house or something. So that was the important thing, is just saying, hey, look, it's not no, it's just a not right now. In fact, there was a house I door knocked. I was quite lucky. I didn't get too many doors slammed in my face, but one of them I do. I remember the address. I won't say it. But then about 2 years later, the guy contacted me and got me in, and then I ended up selling his house. So that was a prime example of, hey, it's not a no, it's just a not right now. You know, if you're thinking, you know, if someone's wanting to sell, you know, they definitely want to be talking to an agent in that respect. In terms of any other vocation or any other line of work that someone's in, yeah, everything's temporary. Everything's just a sort of a moment in time, especially the line of work we're in. You know, it's, yes, your finance, your summaries, but it's market-based. It's based around the property market predominantly. It's a cyclical thing. You know, there's highs and lows, and neither of them last. You know, you've got to remind yourself that when the market's down, it's not always going to be like this. And it's really important to remind yourself that when it's going hot as well. Hey, these good days aren't going to last forever either.
I like that simple mantra.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Let's bring it to property investing, because you've had the cash flow property in the regions, you've got the units. You know, when I first met you, you were like super excited about renovations, about how they, you know, do the two bedroom and whatnot. Now it's been 10 years and you've seen a lot in the market. What would be the three advice that you'd give yourself? Like, let's say you could go back and be like, young Travis.
Yep.
You need to know this.
Yeah, I would. Biggest piece of advice would probably be flexible in your strategy. I thought, and it is a good strategy, but going down the capital gains route. But as I progressed through my career, I actually found maybe cash flow was probably a bit more my sort of thing. We bought a unit in Takapuna. That was our first investment. That was, that's a capital gain property. And then I was bored on the computer during the COVID lockdowns and found a cash flow property, and then sort of did the numbers, spoke to yourself, and we could make it work. I was like, okay, cool. And then taking risk as well, I would say, because that was a risky time. You know, no one knew what was happening. We'd just come out of the first lockdown, and this property, it hadn't been tenanted. It wasn't being sold with tenants. And I thought, oh, hang on, if I can't get tenants in here, I'll be paying the mortgage myself, and I don't know what the property market's going to be doing post-COVID. So it was a bit of a risk. I decided to just go ahead and do it, and that one really paid off. They went up and up and up and up in rent.
What do you think you did right with that one?
I wasn't in a position to bid at the auction, but I built a good relationship with the agent, and then just, you know, as the vendor for sale. I had seen that they'd been on the market earlier pre-COVID with another agency, and the fact that they were still marketing during the lockdown and everything kind of told me that they were motivated to sell. And for that one, I tailored the offer to suit my needs. So I wrote a clause in the contract basically saying that I could use all their photography from the sale for the purpose of tenanting it and letting it. Also got early access to the property solely for the purpose of tenanting it again. So that mitigated some of the risk, but I still nearly didn't go ahead with it during that due diligence period. I just thought this is going to be too much stress. And then I thought, no, I'll take the risk. And then, and glad I did.
Hornby, yeah. It was
Hornby,
yeah. Solid suburb.
It was a big house too, 7-8 bedrooms. And yeah, it was great for cash flow. It had been rented out, I think from memory, at about 780 a week. And we managed to get, 780 a week again for it. We managed to secure tenants before we'd taken possession. So we settled, and the next day the tenants moved in. So the cash flow started coming in immediately, which is great. Yeah, worked really well for us.
You know, your second advice to yourself, right? It's like, young Travis is like, okay, I'll take risk, but how do I quantify this risk?
Yeah, risks are, it's important to step outside your comfort zone, but not be too stupid around it. Like, take an educated risk, you know. Mm-hmm. I basically looked at it and said, you know, can I afford to pay the mortgage for a year if I don't get tenants for it? But yeah, just looking at housing numbers and data as well, like, people need a place to live, right? And I thought, well, yeah, it might be a longer period untenanted, but, you know, as long as I can wear it, and the likelihood of it being untenanted for a year is super unlikely, but the numbers work. So that was ultimately where I went with. I said, okay, that's not really going to happen. So I can, wouldn't be ideal if it was untenanted for a year, but off we go. And that was it. So take calculated risks, I would say. Do your homework. There's an element of risk in all investing, but it's mitigating that.
Yeah, true. What about, like, would you tell young Travis to get a good mortgage broker?
I would. Yes, I would. Yes. Actually, that's how we met. You and Andrew came into our office at the time. I was I won't mention the banks because they all change how favorable they are towards. But the current, we had our own home at that stage, but the bank we were at, we found an investment property we wanted to buy. They rejected us because I'd just gone straight to them. And then it was just great timing. You and Andrew had been into our office. I said, I'll give those guys a buzz. You came around, did the numbers and said, hey, look, this specific bank over here is probably better for your needs, for your line of work. They didn't scale back my commission as much as our.
I do remember now. Yeah. We use Forecast for you on.
Yeah. Yep. And then you went to them, they came back and said, yeah, look, we will lend. I was like, oh, well, that's great. You know, we've gone from a position we thought we couldn't get an investment property to now we're buying one. So that was great. Also, probably aside from that, professionally as well, like, personally, that's been awesome. But I can remember when I was selling, I had a bidder who got rejected by, similar story, they got rejected by their bank, put them in touch with you, and managed to get them over the line in a matter of days at the time. And then they were at the auction. They didn't actually manage to buy that one, but they worked the vendor's interest in that they managed to push up the eventual buyer. And then we went and sold them another property shortly after.
Yeah, awesome. What's the third tip?
Take risk, work hard, and probably be on that basis, Ralph, build a good team around you as well, of depending on what line, like property investment, looking at that, yeah, good mortgage broker, good lawyer, good accountant, depending on what space you're in. If you're looking at sort of flipping or adding value, then yeah, good tradespeople as well to facilitate any bits and pieces that need to be done around the property.
Good team. Nice. Now, if we transition to market, right? You've seen some trends, you've experienced a downturn. No one would have guessed that interest rate go up to 7%. What's your prediction for the next 12 months?
Oh, I've tried to give up predicting the market after COVID. I thought it was going to go down and then it went up. But looking at all the sort of indicators, I would say, I think the next 6 months will certainly be interesting. Like, stock levels are huge at the moment. There's a lot of property on the market. So as a buyer, that's great. There's a lot of choice.
Do you remember the numbers on the top of your head? Like, how does it compare?
So looking at, like, the main market that I working at the moment. So we've got a very, very rough sort of thing. We look on Trade Me, we just go North Shore and look at all the listings. Now, traditionally a bit more of a seller's market would be something less than 1300-1400. Anything north of that, severely north of that, becomes a bit more of a buyer's market. So at the moment, I last looked, I think on Friday, there's over 1800 listings on the North Shore. So there's lots and lots of choice for buyers. As an auctioneer, you're at the coalface, so you actually see that. I don't necessarily like the term buyer's market because things are still selling and they are still selling well. It's just the buyers have got a lot of choice. So there's not as much urgency in the market. But, you know, looking at our auction stats, it's not like for last week, for example, looking at our auction stats for last week, for example, 33% of the properties we took to auction sold under the hammer. Now, 33% doesn't sound that exciting. It sounds a bit more like my marks at school. But for our sellers, it basically means in a 3 to 4 week period, you've got about a third chance if you were selling last week to be sold. But not all the auctions have got bid.
Yeah, I've been paying attention to that. Like I've heard like, hey, some of these houses have no one coming and then just got the one bidder and then they just win the auction. And then there's like this recent one, I just talked to an agent. They got 10 registered buyer in like the second week.
Yep. So it's great. It's a great method for that. And one of my colleagues says, you know, auctions like as a seller is like having a ticket in the lottery where you've got that, you know, to if there's lots of interest in the home, that's great. And you've got that potential for there to be lots of buyers there, lots of bidders duking it out. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, it all depends on the offering, what the property is. There's last week, when you remove all the auctions from our stats that had no bidders, we actually sold 77% of them under the hammer when we had a bidder. So I had 4 auctions last week, 3 of them only had 1 bidder and all 3 of them sold. So it just takes a lot more work from the auctioneer to negotiate, but they all still went for reasonable prices as well. So in this market, the auction process it still favors a seller because it reduces their days on market as opposed to something that goes straight on the market with just a price or by negotiation.
There are talks that prices are coming back down slightly.
Yeah, potentially. It's so hard to – it depends on so many factors. Yeah, I mean, they've definitely come back significantly from the peak in 2021. I know that firsthand myself because that's when we bought our new our family home. Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's the classic economics, supply and demand. An increase in supply very rarely leads to an increase in price. So yeah, with that, lots of choice for buyers. Depends on seller circumstances as well. You know, if they really need to sell and they're in a hurry, then they may be willing to take far less than what they had initially.
So in the next 6 months, what do you see? Buyer's market or seller's market?
I think, hard to say. I think that in the next 6 months, I think we'll see much the same of what it's like now. There's obviously change in legislation coming in with bright line test and there's potential, we'd strongly suspect debt to income ratios will come in from mid-year onwards. Interest rates should hopefully start. Everyone's thinking they'll come off maybe as early as mid-year. That forecast often changed. Maybe it's nearer to the end of the year. So money's cheaper for people, right? So that'll help. Lots of stock on the market, so which works against prices going up, but migration's up, money's becoming cheaper. What else? We've got building costs and consents are building costs are up and building consents are down. So I think there will still continue to be a bit of a shortage there. So ultimately for the market, I think it's positive. I think we've passed the worst of it though. I feel like we're past the bottom.
Yeah, so good. All right, Travis. I think that's all my questions for today, and I really appreciate your time. And thank you for listeners for tuning in today, and hopefully you guys got some new insights. Now, remember, what you learn is only as good as what you take action on. So if you guys learn something, figure out how you can apply it. And if you guys have found value today, all I ask for is just one simple favor, and that is just to share this episode with one other person that's going to benefit from it. And if you guys are watching from YouTube, don't forget to subscribe for weekly content. And until next time, I'll see you guys in the next video. So thanks again, Travis.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me.